Good afternoon. My name is Stacy Crowley. I'm the Vice President of External and Customer Affairs at the California ISO. Thank you for joining us on today's media availability call. We appreciate your engagement on this issue. I'm going to introduce three folks in the room that can help answer questions as they come in. We have an hour for this call. Steve Berberick, our CEO and President, will have to leave at a half past at 2 o'clock, but we will continue to have others in the room for the full hour. With that, I will just introduce the three folks we will have to answer these questions for you. First, again, Steve Berberick, the CEO and President of the California ISO. We have Mark Rothleder, who's the Vice President of Market Policy and Performance. And we have John Phipps, who's the Director of Real-Time Operations for the ISO. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the operator who can help field the questions and help us out. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, please press pound 2 on your telephone keypad to enter the question queue. You will hear a notification when your line is unmuted. At that time, please then state your name, affiliation, and then ask your question. Once again, pressing pound 2 will indicate that you wish to ask a question. And if your question is answered before you come up to the top of the queue, pressing pound 2 again will take yourself out of the queue. Hi, please go ahead.
Hi, am I on?
Yes.
Hi, this is Ann Mulkern. I'm a reporter with Environment and Energy News. I was on the Board of Governors call earlier, and the question came up about adding, you know, natural gas, and Steve Berberich and Mary Leslie both said that California is not getting off its path of going towards, you know, clean energy. So I wanted to ask, how much is that commitment to 100% clean energy by, I think it's 2045, a factor in this in terms of having resource adequacy?
Ann, is that right?
Yeah, Ann.
Yeah, hi, Ann. It's Steve Berberick. I think on a broad perspective, certainly in this case, the renewables are really not a factor. It's simply a matter of raw capacity. Now, it's clear that solar, being one of our predominant renewable resources, doesn't obviously work in the evening hours, but that's a well-known fact, and I think that under the right planning, you can form renewables into serving load, much around the clock, and I think that's the challenge we have. We have had wind in the evening, and that's been helpful, but I think we're going to actually have to expand renewables to charge batteries to be able to ride through these evening peaks like we have now, which is going to mean, as I mentioned in my comments, an overbuild of renewables and a fairly extensive deployment of batteries.
So you're talking home storage batteries or industrial storage batteries, not like batteries in cars?
No. In our case, we're actually thinking about grid-level batteries. We're talking about, 50-megawatt kind of installations.
Have you guys done any ballparks of the amount and the dollar cost you would need?
Cost would be difficult for us to quantify since we don't do procurement. I don't know, Mark, would 12,000 megawatts?
I don't have a ballpark.
I'm going to hazard a guess and say 12,000 megawatts of batteries.
And
in terms of the number, yes, the cost, I did.
Yeah, and I'm not asking cost on that.
You're basically going to have to have significant numbers of megawatts, probably at comparable to the solar, so that you can extend that solar production into the evening hours. So we've got about 12,000 megawatts of solar right now, grid side. You'd want to extend that if you're going to make it usable for the later peak hours.
Was that Mark?
Yeah,
that was Mark.
Sorry.
Okay, just one last question. Has this been suggested to the CPUC? I know you talked about your January report to them. Was this in there?
I think the one of the governors was referring to our summer assessment, which actually comes out a little bit later in the year. But yeah, we do a preview of that with the Public Utility Commission. I think more importantly, though, we're in regular consultation with the PUC about what the system needs, and we participate both in their integrated resource planning and their resource adequacy program, and we try to help them understand what the system needs as part of those processes.
Yeah, this is more in the integrated resource planning arena at the CPUC, because this is new resources that would need to be procured and built. And in that regard, we have advocated for a more aggressive procurement and allowing for nearer timely procurement, because we are worried about the current shortfall or the shortfall the next 3 years, but also the Diablo Canyon retirement.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hey guys. This is Chris Ancarlo, a reporter with KFI down in Los Angeles, and I just wanted to kind of touch on relationship with LADWP. I was also listening in on the meeting this morning, and there was a mention of LADWP helping out with resource allocation. I just wanted to know what that was going to look like today, and I know a lot of our listeners are curious as to the history as to why they're not technically folded under ISO.
Well, this is Steve Berberick. Let me take the first, and then I'll consider how to handle the second. The first, how are they helping us? We've been in contact with them. They're going to actually bring up some additional generation that will be fed into our system through some of their power plants that wouldn't otherwise be needed to meet their own load. Today, I don't remember exactly what the numbers are, but I want to say today maybe it was 250 megawatts, but their aim is to provide us up to 900 megawatts starting tomorrow and through the end of the week. So that's the first part.
Yeah.
Does that answer that?
It does, but well, before you get to the second part of that question, in terms of 900 megawatts, what does that mean? Can you put that into the context of the shortfall that you're expecting, for example, today?
It's enormously helpful. The peak shortfall we're going to see today is, Mark, I think it's right now at 4,400 megawatts still. Yeah, 4,400 megawatts. So, you know, 900 out of that. Now, we expect the 900 tomorrow, but 325 or 250 today, that's helpful. That's thousands and thousands of homes and businesses that wouldn't otherwise lose power.
And would you mind touching on the history lesson a little bit?
Yeah, when in 96, when the legislation creating the wholesale market in California and creating the ISO, which came into being in 98, most of the utilities joined the ISO, and LA made the decision not to do that. And I think a lot of that has to do with you turn over operational control of the transmission system and dispatch of the generation in your area. I think that they took a look at their situation and decided they probably were better being independent like that. And you know, I don't know that I have an opinion of whether it is or not, but that was their prerogative, and that's what they did.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
I appreciate your name and affiliation.
Well, hi, it's Paul Rogers with the San Jose Mercury News. Steve, I wonder if you could address the situation today in a little more detail in terms of what you want to tell the public. I listened at the meeting this morning when you mentioned up to 4,400 megawatts short. You know, if I do the math on that, it's 750 homes per megawatt. That's 3.3 million homes. which I know is not the exact number, but anything close to that would be the largest blackout in state history that we are apparently facing in the next few hours. So what do you want the public to know about that? How many people are likely to lose power, where, and for how long? Thanks.
Yeah, well, I can tell you more about the numbers. I think your math, I can tell you your math, I think, is about right. Whether it's the biggest or not, I can't say. I wasn't here during the energy crisis. But it's substantial. There's no question about it. And I know that it's going to be highly disruptive to people. And I truly, truly wish that there were other options that we had at hand. I can tell you we're going to do everything we can to narrow that gap trying to get additional generation from wherever we can get it, you know, whether it's 5 megawatts or 10 or 20 or wherever we can get it. In addition to that, we are working, and the governor's office, frankly, has done an enormously fantastic job of looking for load that could potentially come off the system, commercial, industrial, and those kinds of things. So hats off to them for helping on that. So the numbers are, they start with the deficiency starts. This is based on a couple hour ago information. In the 3 o'clock hour, and it's about 100 megawatts, and that ramps up as you reach the peak at around probably 4:30. And John, correct me if I'm wrong, my guess is probably about 3,500 megawatts then.
Correct.
And then as you go, then the solar ramps off the system. We'll have to provide for that. You'll get into what we call our net peak, which is at 7-ish, 7 p.m.-ish, and that's where you will get the peak load reduction of the 4,400 megawatts.
So that's helpful. By comparison, in March 2001, 1.5 million customers in California lost power in that blackout. So what you're describing, if you do have to shed 4,400, would be double the size of the largest blackout in state history. Do you know where generally that's going to be happening? And can you talk a little bit about who's deciding who gets cut off and for how long?
Yeah. Again, I can't speak to a historical comparison, so I'll just accept your statement on the who and where and is not up to us. What the process is, we tell the utilities that we need to shed a certain amount of load to meet demand. And by a little bit of background here, in our case, supply and demand always have to be equal. When there's more demand than supply, then you can eventually crash the system if you don't take steps, which is what our operators are doing. They're taking steps to ensure that there's not a widespread system collapse. So we ask the utilities, they get a share of it, and a pro rata share of it. And in this case, because PG&E and Edison are our two biggest utilities, they'll get the lion's share of the load shed. Then they have protocols on how they rotate that load shed. We're not involved in the actual load shed. We order it, but the utilities actually execute it. And where they do that, I don't know. The utilities have told me that they are doing their best to try to let customers know that might be impacted. That's the best I can answer that question. The utilities could tell you more specifically how they do their blackouts.
Got it. Final thing. It sounds like you're saying some of these could start around 3 p.m. And probably extend as late as 10, I think you mentioned at the meeting. Is that still accurate? And how long should most people whose power is turned out today expect to be out for?
This is John Phipp, real-time operations. From talking to the floor just recently, they did call on the demand response that's available to us for the 3 o'clock hour, and then some additional emergency assistance from outside of California. So I do think we've been able to push out the initial load interruptions for a couple hours. So hopefully it might be more to around 4 p.m.
Thank you. And how long is it going to go for?
Well, the load sheds, again, are decided by the utilities, and they rotate them, and I'm gonna do my best. I believe they do it in one-hour blocks. Now, they do it in a one-hour block. There is some restoration latency. So when we tell, you know, when they restore the block, I think sometimes it takes there's varying times at how long it takes to do the block. Let me give an example. I know that PG&E, if they drop some load in high fire areas, they're going to make sure that those lines are clear, so they don't, you know, have any combustibles when they re-energize that line. So that might take a little bit longer. But the bottom line is there are hour blocks, and if I had to hazard a guess, my guess is it would be, factoring everything in, on average, probably about 2 hours.
Thank you very much.
Hi, please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Pete Demetrio with KNX 1070 News Radio in Los Angeles calling. I listened to some of the meeting earlier today and listening now. I simply got a question. The heat storm notwithstanding, how do we get into a situation where we don't have electrical generating capacity? Did we take offline natural coal-fired and other plants that were sustained, confirmed sources of electricity and replacing them with sources that simply weren't as sustainable or ongoing? Meaning, sure, we brought on green things, we brought on solar and everything else, but should we have not discontinued those natural gas and other sources of generating power until we were certain we had the ability to do sustainable power generation, then take those plants offline?
That's a good question. California has obviously been embarking on a very aggressive renewable build-out program through its renewable portfolio standards. And in general, those plants that were retired have been backfilled with renewables. And I think that's well and good. And I think generally during the day, particularly with solar, that's an adequate trade out. However, as you get to when solar is leaving at night, that's one of the more particularly difficult times for us to serve load. I don't know that you need to serve that load with a thermal plant, but I do think you need to consider how you will serve that load before you retire that thermal plant. And I think that's probably the bigger issue that needs to be considered, is making sure that we have adequate power when plants are retired. And a good example of that is Diablo Canyon. 2,200 megawatts is going to retire in 2024 and 2025. And I think it's absolutely imperative that we have an adequate design of replacement energy for that unit or those units. So I think that's what needs to better occur, happen. And we're working with the Public Utility Commission to make sure that does happen.
Well, when you have a situation like that where you take off something offline and you don't have a guaranteed source on it, guys, you're going to get caught short. I mean, you know, that's basic math. And, you know, again, I appreciate that they want to do renewables. They want to do things that are green. But if you can't take care of your daily needs, going to something that is nice from a PC standpoint is not really good from an AC/DC standpoint. You've got to have sustained power for people. Let me phrase it in a different way. Beyond what's currently online, are there any plants or anything which are currently dormant which could be brought online to alleviate this situation, if not today, in the next several weeks, because we are going to have all the way through until roughly October.
Yeah, we are exploring that option. Now, the plants would have to be contracted with, so we'd have to work with the Public Utility Commission on it, but we are exploring that option.
Any idea, rough estimate on how many plants that are out there that conceivably could give you the power that you need to avoid these type of shortfalls, 3,000 to 4,000 megawatts?
Sitting here, I couldn't tell you how much is out there. I think it's important, though, to kind of respond to your point. We have a perfect storm going on here, and usually when we have enough capacity in California, if you count what's in California and you count what we normally get in the region, what we have is a situation where the entire region is more than hot. It's extremely hot, and that is a very much a contributing factor to this issue. We can't get the energy that we would normally get from out of state because it's being used to serve load natively. So that would probably account for another 4,000 or 5,000 megawatts and could very well have closed the gap. On most days, it does close the gap. But when you have such extreme conditions regionally like we have now, that's what creates this.
Hi, please go ahead and state your name and affiliation.
This is Dale Kassler with the Sacramento Bee. Steve, could you talk a little bit more about the resource adequacy issue and why you're upset with the PUC? As I take it from your comments this morning, it sounds like we've been kind of relying on imports coming in at the 11th hour too frequently, and you want the PUC to require the utilities to nail down this power ahead of time. Am I right?
I think that's a fair assertion, yes.
So where does this issue go from there? What feedback do you get from the PUC?
Well, let's take a step back. The PUC, I know the commissioners, I know the people at the Public Utility Commission. They're thoughtful, well-meaning people. They're certainly not out to try to undermine the system in any stretch of the imagination. They're as dedicated to reliability as we are. But they do have ponderous processes. I think they would admit to that. And those ponderous processes are difficult when you're in such a rapidly evolving environment as we're in right now. We have somewhere on the order of 7,000 megawatts of behind-the-meter generation now, which has probably doubled in the last 2 years. We have retirements of units across the West that has really accelerated in the last 2 years. And what we've been working with the PUC on is to make sure that the resource adequacy program meets the realities of the new grid. I think it was more than adequate, 5 or 10 years ago, but it breaks down when you have the grid that I just described. So I know that they're working on this. I guess we would want them to work quicker on it because we do need to secure the if we're going to rely on imports, we need to secure them better. That is absolutely part of the equation. And resource adequacy needs to understand that the evening hours after the sun is down is just important as for the showings for the load-serving entities as the capacity is at 4:30 in the afternoon. So those are two of the principal things I think that needs to happen. I do know that they're considering those things as part of the current docket, but that docket, Mark, is probably 2 years.
It's an annual process, but the current process is going to finish up late this year or early next year.
Dale, did you get that?
Yes, I did. Thank you. And I know this number, I'm sure, fluctuates, but how much does California, what percentage of the pie chart are imports?
About 25% on average across the year. And I want to say this, it's not bad to get imports. I mean, you can get cheaper power and perhaps even cleaner power from out of state, from the hydro systems in the Northwest, as an example, or excess energy that's around someplace. It's not bad to do that. It's just you need to make sure your supply is secure.
Hi, please state your name and affiliation.
This should probably be my last one.
Hi, Steve. This is Adam Beam with the Associated Press. I just wanted to clarify something you said earlier. Did I hear you say that you expect this to impact about 3.3 million homes today, the outage?
I believe it was one of the reporters that was doing that math, but I think it's probably fairly accurate.
Okay, and my other question was one I think you had somewhat answered earlier, but it was during your comments this morning in the board meeting, you said this could have been avoided. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, the reforms that I suggested just a few minutes ago to Mr. Kessler, I think those are reforms that we've been talking about for quite a while. And they haven't moved as fast as we would want them to. So I think that's the principal concern that we have, that we see how the grid operates, and we tell the regulatory authorities how the grid operates. They're under a lot of pressure from a lot of people to do a lot of different things. I guess we're going to have to do a better job of making our voice heard through all of that noise. And everyone, I apologize, but I have to go take another call. So the rest of the team will stay here and answer your questions. I think probably Mark Rothleder will take point in taking care of the rest of them. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Hi, please state your name and affiliation.
Yeah, this is James Downing at Primary today. My question is, I know Steve was talking a lot about reforms at the PUC level, but is there anything you can do with FERC to kind of help the situation, any filings you can make with them to try to improve things?
This is Mark Rothleder. At this point, FERC has been very responsive to any requests that we've made. At this point, we've got a couple of normal policy changes that may be live there. There's nothing at this point that I can point to that we are asking FERC for any changes at this point.
Is that
to address this immediate issue, there's nothing that we flagged at this point.
Is that something that could change though going forward, given that this is kind of an evolving situation?
Correct. I mean, this is evolving, and we will continue to monitor, see if there's anything related that FERC could do. But at this point, there's nothing, but that could change.
Hi, please go ahead. Please state your name and affiliation.
Hi, this is Kasia Mysek with S&P Global Platts. I had three questions. The first one was, when was the last time the ISO had rotating outages? The second is the 1,000 megawatts of wind that was lost, I think it was the 14th or the 15th. What happened there? What caused that? And then the third was, when you issue a flex alert, what kind of reaction do you see from customers? I mean, is there a number like megawatts you can put on that as far as what impact you see and how that helps the grid?
This is Mark Rothleder. I'll, unless I'm corrected by others, I think the last time we've had these type of rotating blackouts was 2001. There have been other outages related to public safety shutoffs, but that's a different issue. And then there's obviously storm and localized outages, but those are different as well. So I assume you're referring to system shortfall issue.
Correct. Yes.
The second question, as far as what happened to the 1,000 megawatts of wind, from what I can tell, it looked like it's just a weather type of event. The wind slowed down in the area where the production was, and shortly thereafter, it started to come back. It's the nature of wind, especially in those canyon areas, that can change in short order. The flex alert, historically, it depends on the situation and the day, but I think we've typically have seen maybe 400 to 500 megawatts of response. We have not done any analysis yet about what level of response we saw on Friday at this point.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hi, please state your name and affiliation.
Hey, Sammy Roth here from the LA Times. Mark, I'm looking at the presentation that you made to the ISO Board of Governors last September, looking at potential shortfalls over the next few years. In the presentation, what you had is a projected shortfall of 2,300 megawatts in summer 2020 and you know, worsening in the next few years. So, you know, I'm curious if you're looking at, you know, potentially a 4,400 megawatt shortfall today. You know, is that much worse than you guys, you know, expected to see even a few months ago? And if so, why? And second question, what, if anything, you know, could have or should have been done over just the last, you know, 9 or 10 months here to prepare for these 2020 shortfalls that wasn't done?
I think the difference between what we saw there is probably the level of temperature and the larger amounts of load than what was in that analysis. These are more extreme events, possibly even beyond a 1 in 10 event, but that will be determined after the fact in terms of the weather conditions. So it's really just the load levels that were assumed there. In terms of, what could have been done? I think what could have been done in the short order, at least in the 9 months, is probably secure potentially more imports and get it locked up if it was available. Now, at the end of the day, it may not have been available, and it may not have been available on particular under these conditions, so it may not have been effective, but at least in the 9 month period, you're really outside of the realm of building new stuff at this point. I guess you could have done a search for some of those resources that may have been shut down, and you could restarted them. That, I guess, that was another option that could have been deployed if they wanted to address that 2,200 shortfall.
I assume that really would have been applicable to gas plants, stuff that had been shut down.
Largely, yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the what you were assuming then, and what were you assuming when you did that analysis in terms of weather and load, if not what we're seeing now?
I think that analysis was done off of the 1 and 2 load as well, because that's what the CPUC uses as the guidance. But what that attempted to do was look at what the shortfalls were, not at the traditional peak hour that the resource adequacy requirements set, but it did an additional analysis looking at that later hour, basically 8 p.m., and that's where we were seeing the shortfalls for the exact reason that we saw materialize, and that is during that hour, you don't have any solar production. And then also it made more realistic assumptions about the imports.
Hi, please go ahead and state your name and affiliation.
Yes, this is Elizabeth McCarthy with California Current. Thanks, you guys, for taking this call. I have a couple of questions. One is under the governor's executive order. Do you know how much power we could possibly get from ships that are plugged in at port?
I don't know the exact number, but I believe I heard potentially in the tens, maybe 50 to 80 megawatts.
From each ship?
No, I think in total is what I understood.
Okay. And my other question is, given you say it's going to take about 9 months to get new resources, and the difference between the PUC's resource adequacy requirement of 3,300 and what you had called for, how long do you estimate it could take to get more resource adequacy online, assuming the CPUC saw the Cal ISO's light on what is needed?
Okay, so just to be clear, when I was referring to the 9 months, I think I was referring to what could have been done 9 months ago, and I think it was in reference to securing, not building additional resources necessary, but just securing existing capacity, and I think I was referring to the import capability. That's what I was referring to in the 9 months. That said, there is already procurement authorized and building that is starting to develop in response to the CPUC's actions to our concerns. They did authorize 3,300 megawatts of procurement to be ramped in over 2021, before summer 2021, and then before the end of 2022.
But you guys called for well over 1,000 more, didn't you?
Correct. So, and that's that was my follow-up to that, was that why the 3,300 megawatts is a good start. What that order also recommended was continuing on with the extension of the OTC resources, so you have both the existing resources that were otherwise scheduled to retire available, plus the ramp in of those new resources, and in order for those resources that are going to retire to ultimately retire potentially in the 2022, you would need to, in our opinion, address the additional capacity, the additional 1,000 megawatts. And so we continue to recommend authorizing that additional 1,000 megawatts before those resources completely retire.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Please state your name and affiliation. Hi, please state your name and affiliation.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Marcelino calling from City News Service. And I wanted to circle back to something Steve said at the outset of the call when he said renewables were not really a factor in this situation. During his noon briefing, Governor Newsom said that pulling power plants offline had created gaps in reliability of the grid, indicated that he would use all tools in the toolkit to try and solve the problem, and that would include bringing peaker plants online, or at least implied it could include bringing peaker plants online. My understanding is that peaker plants are basically gas plants, and I wanted to know, one, where are the plants that could most readily be brought back online? Two, how quickly could that be done? Can it even be done within this 72-hour window? And three, do you control that process or does someone else?
Last question first. Someone else controls that process. The resources would have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis of how long each one would take to return. I suspect some of them may be able to return in relatively short order, but other ones would need to be really reviewed and see if there's additional maintenance or any kind of repairs that need to be done to bring them back. And even when they come back, the level of how reliable they are will still be in question because these have not been run for quite a while. Yes, we might be able to get them started, but how long they would actually be able to run for reliably would be in question. Nonetheless, we are supportive of going after those, and where they are, they really are in various parts of California. I can't give you any specific identification at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, please state your name and affiliation.
Hi, this is Ivan Penn of the New York Times. For some clarity, just on the Friday incident, was part of the problem that a plant in reserve did not operate when called upon, and or were there the two plants that were functioning and went offline?
So on the Friday's, John Phipps, and on Friday's event, there was a plant that was online at basically full load, and it tripped. And so BC went offline and was no longer available. In fact, it didn't return until later that night. So it was not anything that was back in reserve, but it was actually online serving load.
Okay, but then there were two plants that were at issue.
On Friday night, we just had the one plant that tripped. So, yeah, on Saturday, we had the wind ramped out very quickly, and that's actually an aggregate of hundreds of plants, of wind, basically turbines. So that's actually not really one plant. That's actually all across California. They are concentrated in areas, but that's the total wind that we have on the system ramped down very quickly. That was one incident. So really, they didn't actually go offline. They just lost the wind died off, and so the wind turbines quit spinning or slowed down. The other one was a gas-fired plant that was generating and ramped, suddenly just ramped down to almost offline, and it stopped right before it went offline. But so those are two different plants, two that were happening pretty much simultaneously. But
It ramped down because it had mechanical issues, is that correct?
That I don't know for sure yet. Yeah. But the wind was actually, I wouldn't say really one plant, but the whole fleet, the whole wind fleet across California.
Okay, so there were two gas plants total the weekend. That
one on Friday.
One on Friday,
one on Saturday, and then the winds died down, affecting the wind.
Correct. And then there was again. That's what it was probably happening is there was gusts because we saw the wind would ramp up, ramp down, and ramp up, and it actually ramped up very quickly for a more sustained period than previously. But then it suddenly turned and ramped down just as fast as it ramped up. 10, 15 minutes later, it turned around and ramped back up again. So it did take the system for a bit of a ride. We normally have enough regulation to manage some of that. But on this condition where we were already tapped out on our resources to meet the load, we just didn't have the same flexibility in our system.
Okay, thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Hi, this is J.D. Morris from the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm wondering how much of this is an infrastructure problem? So, like, would investments in, or what would a major investment in, like, transmission do to this equation?
Being this is largely a system problem, but for maybe some issues with import capability due to some work going on in the north, this is not a transmission problem. This is a supply resource capacity problem.
Okay. Also, I was wondering if you could elaborate on whether you guys have considered partnering with local government agencies to do like wireless emergency alerts or even NICSLs when you call a flex alert. Because, you know, like the only notifications that I've seen about that are, I know you have your app, but your press releases are the only other ones. So that I know of. So are you considering putting more measures in place to really be more aggressive about warning people to voluntarily conserve power?
This is Oscar Hidalgo, the Director of Communications here at the ISO. I appreciate the question. We're working with the utilities to notify those that are in the areas that would be affected by an outage. And those utilities are noticing customers directly, either by text, email, or voice telephone. So we've worked with the utilities, and they've been extremely cooperative in helping reach that direct customer. As far as the Flex Alert, I think we'd have to also look at funding in the future years. This is in previous years we've had an advertising campaign funded by order of the CPUC, and that probably has to be talked about at how we get more participation from consumers to actively conserve energy when the grid operator, when the ISO ask for additional support.
But, like, I subscribe to, like, City of San Francisco. I live in San Francisco. I subscribe to the city's opt-in, you know, text alerts through Nixtel. They sent one out when blackouts were coming, but they couldn't they just as easily send out a message saying, you know, hey, there's a flex alert. You should conserve power so we don't have to do a blackout in the first place? Like, why would that cost money? Yeah.
Well, I think that we work with the utilities and they do that as much as possible. We have our own Flex Alert subscription list that we reach out and do as much as we can from an earned media perspective, quite frankly, to reach out to customers. Again, in previous years, we've had a pretty significant advertising campaign that no longer exists. It's no longer funded. And I think that has to be looked at. This was something that was born after the energy crisis in 2001 that does exactly what you're saying, is it helps build more awareness that conservation is needed, and that can help the grid operator balance supply with demand.
Okay.
You use social media.
Last part.
And yeah, we do use social media as well, and of course do that. Try our best to work with the media to get the word out, as we have in this incident.
Okay. Last question. You put out specific numbers about the you know, the 4,400 megawatt shortage forecast today. I haven't seen one for tomorrow. Forgive me if I missed it, but do you? Well, what are you forecasting tomorrow, and how will that compare to today?
The early indications resulting from the day ahead market indicate it's less than what we saw coming into today. I believe it's 2,300, or what's the?
This is John Phipps here. Yeah, I was just actually trying to read that email. We're scrambling to get those calculations here during the middle of this call. But what Mark said is true. I believe it's in the range of 2,300 to 2,500 megawatts is what the initial indication is.
2,700 at 1,900 is the largest. And again, those are probably, if we are successful in getting other measures and some mitigations working, those might be on the high end, but those are what we're forecasting right now.
Hi, you're next in line. Please state your name and affiliation.
Yes. Name's Lynn Robertson. The outfit is Moonlight Systems. We do some IT consulting, particularly in emergency backup. I was curious if one of you gentlemen could possibly answer this question. Since we're faced with this, at least for the foreseeable future, should we be advising IT departments to basically have at least 2 hours of backup running? Thank you.
I think if there are for any kind of critical processes or computing, I'd always recommend to have sufficient backup. How long and what's necessary, I think, is really an individual design element.
Okay. Please go ahead and state your name and affiliation.
Yeah, hello. This is Will Wade from Bloomberg News. Thanks for making this time. I wanted to ask a little bit more about the battery storage that was mentioned at the beginning of the call. That's a lot of batteries, and it certainly isn't going to show up overnight. Whereas it looks like tomorrow overnight, we're expecting even more power demand than today, so we can certainly look forward to these kind of rolling blackouts continuing for the foreseeable future. What's the plan between today and when we do have all that battery storage online?
Well, it'll depend on the conditions, the weather conditions in California and the West, and it will depend on the the success of any of the measures that are currently underway will determine that. There are, in the next, based on that 3,300 megawatt authorized procurement, we believe a large portion of that is going to be batteries, and so there will be thousands of megawatts of additional batteries probably in the next year or two.
Okay, Steve was talking about 12 gigawatts of battery capacity.
Yeah, that's a longer, I think it's a longer term projection, what would be needed to get to the kind of the larger decarbonized grid goals. I was referring to the next couple of years.
So how long does it take to get to 12 gigawatts?
I can't say for sure how long that is, and but I will say that the battery installation seemed to be coming in about a year, 18-month lead time, and it depends on the siting. So if you got sites, it's faster. If you need siting, it'll take longer.
Okay.
Hi, please go ahead and state your name and affiliation.
Yes, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi there. This is Colby Bermel with Politico. I had a few questions, if you don't mind. So I was wondering how the EIM has been performing during this heat wave. Is it basically not rendered like useless necessarily because of kind of the overwhelming nature of this situation, but could you just talk about the EIM's role in all this, and are there any changes that are being considered to it, given what's been happening?
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. I think the EIM was not necessarily designed to solve these large or shortfalls. That said, we have seen the energy imbalance market perform to provide some incremental amount of energy across the hours that are short. But again, it's not going to solve that problem. In terms of changes going forward, we are looking to try to extend the energy imbalance market concept into the day-ahead market, which would make it more effective. But it's still limited to the infrastructure and the resources that you have, but it can make better decisions about how to use those resources, commit those resources a day ahead. Again, even that extension would not be able, doesn't address true capacity shortfalls. That has to be done through a longer-term planning process.
Thanks. And yeah, I wanted to ask about the EDAM as well. And just could you just tell us where that is in the process and just kind of some more color on kind of what role that would play during events like this?
Sure. Thanks. We're in the early stages of development of the policy. Obviously, there are some complicated and challenging issues that we have to address. We're currently in the process of discussing three topics. One is transmission. How does transmission get provisioned for the use in the day ahead, extended day-ahead market? And then things like resource efficiency, because the concept of EIM and EDAM are you come into the EIM or the day-ahead market with sufficient capacity on your own, and then you're able to leverage it for economic opportunity, making better decisions than what you would have done on, individually. But you can see here that if you're short because of capacity, the resource efficiency will be hard to address. So days like this are some of the things we have to work through, is what do we do on those types of days with regards to EDAM, and if someone was short, how should the extended day ahead market handle those types of situations? In terms of the opportunity, we believe there's a great opportunity to, again, assuming you're coming in sufficient in the first place, you can make much better decisions in terms of where and what resources to commit and better situational awareness to be prepared for maybe not these types of events, but outages in the system or transmission constraints across the network. So that is really the opportunity that EDAM really plays. And I should say, in parallel with that, we've got some other governance changes going on that are being considered in parallel with what I just described about transmission and resource sufficiency.
Thanks for that. And just one or two like quick more things, if I may. Obviously, all types of resources were impacted over the weekend, of course. We had the cloud cover for solar, we had the wind going offline, and we had the gas plant or two tripping, as was described. So given that, the weather and climate change, like these factors are obviously agnostic to resources, what can be done to ensure the reliability right now of just all kinds of resources?
Obviously, ensuring that there's proper maintenance, better and improved situational awareness so you can forecast some of these events. If there are at least cloud cover coming over solar fields, you can predict that and prepare for that. If there's changes in wind patterns, being able to, again, forecast that and respond to those types of events. Again, those are usually managed very well because you have enough reserves, operating reserves, and capacity in reserves. Those are not managed well if you are at the edge where you don't have enough reserve.
Thanks. Operator, we'll take one more question.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, this is...
Hi, your line.
Yeah, this is Steve Gorman from Reuters. Can you hear me? Hello? This
yes.
is Steve Gorman from Reuters.
Yes.
Yeah, hi. So I just wanted to make sure I understand. So you're still you're projecting a 4,400 megawatt shortage in supply that's going to happen today, and that's going to result in a rolling blackouts that are expected to start around 4 o'clock, and probably last here and there for a couple of hours or 2 or 4 hours. About 2 hours they would probably go on in the evening, or for more than that.
I think the 4,400 may be close and maybe a little bit high at this point. The time, yes, I think we're right now still forecasting potentially as early as 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And the total event could be as long as until 10 o'clock in the evening. The okay. individual impacts we expect may be closer to 1 to 2 hours potentially. As the rotating outages occur. So that's the 1 to 2 hours.
So, right, so the blackouts will happen in like blocks of about an hour or two for each block. Okay. And then have you all issued a stage 3 emergency declaration for this event like there was on Friday?
Not yet, no. We do that when we can no longer meet our load and we have to start our load shedding. And I will say that one thing that's going to be an unknown at this point is the impact of the flex alert and just this news awareness that's out there now. Are people going to start reducing their use of the electricity? And then the emergency assistance we are getting from our neighboring utilities, we are seeing that increase. So as of right now, I'm going to say, we're hopeful that we can reduce that impact, but we are still going with the 4 o'clock estimate based on the previous information.
Yeah, it does look like some of the efforts are starting to take hold, and we're seeing some load reduction from the original forecast from yesterday. So we're hopeful, again, that's why the 3 o'clock may be pushed out to 4 o'clock. Maybe we'll be able to push out further, but I don't want to understate that we're still expecting to be very challenged and still need to do some amount in that 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock time period.
So thank you very much for your time and engagement on this. We appreciate the question. Should you have additional questions, please contact our media team at isomedia@kaiso.com, isomedia@caiso.com. Also, this, as you heard today, really, this is a consumer should be prepared for the days today and the days to come flex alerts and conservation measures will really help us, as you heard, but the consumer should really be prepared for the next couple days. So thank you for your attention to this.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using Event Services. You may now disconnect.